Derek Eater, who has his own website, which is D-E-R-E-K-E-D-E-R, DerekEater.com. I met him at a place called OpenGov Hack Night. And I have to admit, I was, you know, a little concerned about showing up at this thing because I have a reputation and everything. And then I show up and there's people crowded into this little room and spilling out into the halls. And it's at this place. I don't know if you were listening earlier when I told folks that it was at 1871.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their very oh so slick website. But, you know,
slick, yes.
Yeah, well, because they're techies, right?
Sure, yeah, that's what it's all about.
What is 1871, and why is it the host to OpenGov Hack Night?
So 1871 is a tech incubator space downtown in the Merchandise Mart here in Chicago, and it is a place for, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, on the order of around 200 different startups are in this space, and it's meant specifically for new technology startups, small companies, maybe one to two person companies, just sort of trying out new technology ideas and trying out new business ideas. And it's very much aligns with what we do at the OpenGov Hack Night, which is the kind of the intersection of technology and civics and government and municipal information. The space is actually a pretty big draw, I would say, as far as getting people to come to the event. A lot of people have heard about 1871, and there's this kind of cool factor to it. So it's a great host for it. We've been there for, man, over 2 years now.
I know, and I seem to be the last person in Chicago to have figured this out. I looked at your media, and everybody in the world has reported on this except me.
It's kind of crazy how we haven't really sought out media, but just due to the fact that it's every week and that we kind of keep churning out new ideas and new apps from this community, different people, and actually journalists are actually some of the people that come every week.
Well, I was there.
Right.
I mean, I was kind of showing up under several auspices. One was this show, but the other was as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition because somebody had said, well, we might do a recycling app.
Right, yeah. So that's a recent development. So the history of the event is it started about 2 years ago, and it was just four of us who were interested in working with open data that the city of Chicago had released. And we decided that it was something that we were doing in our spare time outside of our 9-to-5 working hours. And so we needed a place to get together every week to work on this stuff because it was just getting annoying to schedule everybody. So we just started meeting at the same time and same place, and it turned out that a lot of other people had the same interests as us, and it sort of grew organically. And now we're at like 70 to 80 people, and we've pretty much outgrown the room we're currently
exactly.
in right now. So,
and I can't imagine. I know you bring in food when you do this, which is really one of the cool things about
it. But during the dinner hour, so it's a good thing to
provide. 6 o'clock usually.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
It made me think when I was there, is there enough food for everybody? I'm not sure you have enough for everybody at the moment.
Yeah, we try to keep up with the number of people that show up. One thing about, so we ask people to RSVP, but not everybody does. And so it just kind of, it's every week is kind of a guess as to how many people are going to show up and making sure we get enough food. We have sponsors to handle that, which is nice. It's run on a volunteer basis. There's no entity or organization behind it. It's really just a community. And we've sort of, like I said, grown organically. And as we added more people, we needed to get, we decided to start paying for food. And
but somebody has to... organize some of this.
Right. I mean, I do most of that. Also, Christopher Whitaker is another organizer for the event. And it's something that it doesn't take that much time. Actually, that's one of the goals, my goals of the event is to minimize the amount of effort it takes to set it up every week. We have presenters that come in, but they typically reach out to us at this point. And we send out an email to everybody. And then everything else is just sort of on autopilot, right? It's in the same space, same time.
And it helps that you've got a sponsor like 1871.
Yeah, right.
And a clubhouse.
Amazing.
You know, a clubhouse for an organization. I can't tell you how many not-for-profits I've been involved with over the course of my life. And one of the biggest barriers to making them work is having a clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
where you can meet regularly and be welcome.
Yeah, I mean, we're working in the digital world with making digital apps, but there's nothing that you can... Nothing replaces that physical interaction.
Yeah, talking face-to-face.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a really good point, that in this world, we have, in a lot of ways, we have started to skip the face-to-face thing. Especially if somebody's on the West Coast and somebody's on the East Coast, yeah, you can Skype and you can email and you can do all that. But there is something, there's an energy about working together.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, the key word working, right? That is another sort of differentiator between our group and say, other sort of monthly meetups or weekly meetups, is the goal of the group is to actually try to get a group together and try to build something. And in doing that with a group of collaborators, you're able to make new connections. You're able to sort of interact with people in a way that you wouldn't otherwise, and just sort of if it was just a conversation.
And meet people that you wouldn't otherwise because they're in different disciplines.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Okay. How old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay. You're a little older than... Good. I'm glad. I'm glad you're not like 22.
Actually, wait. I'm 31. I'm going to be 32 soon. Anyways.
Oh,
yeah.
You youngsters. They always.
You know, I skew
average
towards
up. Oh, I really am 32.
Well, whenever I have a birthday, I forget for a while. It's hard. Like you forget. You go, yeah, I'm whatever I was. So I'm trying to get ahead of that.
Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. We're being told that our youth don't care about civic activities and they don't engage. You're the lie to that, okay? You're the antithesis of that because you have engaged big time in a way that could possibly change everything, change the way our government works, change the way social structures work. Do you see this as a new paradigm for politics?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. My story actually... I've always had an interest in politics and civics. I volunteered for the 2008 Obama campaign, and I sort of had an interest on the side on political things. It was never really Chicago focused. I always felt that was sort of hard to access. But then all of a sudden in 2011, when we got a new mayor, Mayor Emanuel, they decided to have an open data policy, which means that they actually took data that had been sort of stored away in government silos for, you know, sometimes decades, and actually released that data in the open for anybody to use for free. And when that happened, it enabled a whole new group of people to have an interaction with the city that was not there before. We have all sorts of data that's available now on crime reports. There's a set of data on the data portal, the Chicago data portal, which is data.cityofchicago.org, that has every single crime reported to the Chicago Police Department since 2001. And this is something on the order of like 5.5 to 6 million crimes, with information about where it happened, when it happened, what kind of crime it was. There's information about lobbying. There's information about energy use.
And yet, there are still those who say there's all this data that's out there, and we still can't find out who has access to the mayor's office.
Right. Yeah. So therein lies like a little bit of. It's hard, right? It's hard to release all this data, and right now it's very much.
But some people say that the problem is that you send all this data out, and it makes people think, ooh, and then they get distracted by
sure.
it. Oh, look, a butterfly, and they go searching through this data that, as you said, has been sitting around gathering dust, and yet the stuff that's right in front of them is not so transparent. I was reading an article that was actually reporting on what you're doing there, and they talked about that. It was, we've got this data here, but it's still not really a transparent government. How do you reconcile those two?
Right. So there's a good saying that sort of addresses this topic really well, which is oftentimes when reporters have been the sort of the leaders in sort of getting data out of governments for a long time. There's taking advantage of freedom of information requests, and that local media is still doing that really well. A saying that really I think does a good job of getting at this point is that oftentimes when reporters ask for data about a particular topic, governments can oftentimes sort of squelch the investigation by just dumping the data on them, saying, like, here you go, here's everything, right? And it's
right.
overwhelming, right?
Yes.
There's just so much data that you can't even figure, and like, they, and you know, knowing that reporters don't have a lot of time and a lot of technical resources, typically, they're going to maybe not have the time to go, like, sift through all that data. What's changing now, though, is the tools that are available to dive into that data, right? I think that governments typically are going to, since they're the ones leading the initiative of releasing the data, they're going to release what's easiest for them to release first, which in many ways makes sense, I think. And it's up to us as the community to keep pushing them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think one way to do that is also to encourage them and sort of, I would actually say, and applaud them for doing what they already do, right? They have released this crime data. They have released this other data. And we've since made all sorts of different applications with that data. That's an important step to take, to say, look, the work that you've already done, the time you've invested in releasing this data is yielding these positive results. It's important to do that, but at the same time, keep pushing, right? And,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reporter at the Chicago Tribune, I think it's David Kidwell, and he is, this is his issue, right? The issue of transparency around the mayor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something—
Well, a lot of them,
yeah.
I mean, you just pick up a Chicago Reader and look at
yeah.
Mick Dumke and Ben Jarofsky,
yep.
who, by the way, just won an award for their investigative journalism. Congratulations to them. But they are among the people that, but it seems that there's not enough, because mm-hmm. it, as you pointed out, it's really hard to get through the clutter and figure out what is the information mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. is really going to help you.
True. And that's one of the focuses and one of the points of the Hack Night, right? Of the OpenGov Hack Night. It is a place for people to really look at this data and try to make sense of it, because data never speaks for itself. You have to do research.
To interpret,
you have to talk to people. You have to figure out how it was created. You have to figure out why it was created. You have to figure out where there are flaws in it. And only then, after doing a ton of really, there's no way to automate that away. You have to just do sort of the hard work of
so
researching.
Some of it is not okay. And what is your background, by the way?
I'm a web developer. So I went to for computer engineering, and I've been a web developer for about 10 years now.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's Derek Eater with Open City and OpenGov Hack Night. You throw the word hack in there. And it
was that the word that scared
that's the
you?
Word yeah that's the word that scares me, okay, and it's not really, it's basically you're taking information that is
right.
public information, but you made it sound sexy.
So the word hack is something that has been it has a bunch of different meanings depending on who you ask. There's, you know, the maybe the negative one is like, oh, a computer hacker, someone
right.
who's trying to do ill or to, you know, steal your information. The other definition for hack is to come up with a clever solution to something in a technical way. And that is very much in the spirit of what we're trying to do. We're taking this government data that's been released and we're trying to build something that's new, right? Approach it in a way that hadn't been tried before. And using that as a way to innovate in this area and not only come up with cool applications that are useful for citizens, but also in many ways we're feeding back into the city. They are taking some of these ideas themselves and incorporating them into what they do. So it's very much an engine of innovation that's going on. Not so much trying to take anybody's
No, it's just a little bit on the edge there, a little edgy enough. So
sure,
that
yeah.
to
well, and people, to, I mean, it's new, right? It's green
it
fields, right? This is something that, frankly, wasn't around in America 3-4 years ago. And it is because of this open data that's available, right? And
mm-hmm.
It's because of that that this community has sprung up. And obviously, there's a lot of people that have done a lot of amazing work here in our community. But the real catalyst was the fact that there's data when there wasn't before. That's the thing that changed, right? I was already here, right? I already cared about the things I cared about. Now I have this data to work with, and it's sort of spun me off in this crazy trajectory of doing all this civic technology stuff.
I want to get to the various apps that you have worked on, and you seem to be among the group, the principal guy who's just out there coming up with app after app, Transit Future, an interactive map about how getting better transit in mm-hmm. Cook County. The one I talked about on this show several weeks ago, I don't know if you know that, but I mentioned the is there sewage in the Chicago River.
I had a feeling you would probably be interested in that.
Yeah, I did. That was an interesting one, especially when we had that Monday night rain event and then a bunch of places were pouring sewage into the Chicago mm-hmm. River. I went to your app and went, oh, yeah, this is where it's happening. Yeah. Chicago Council-matic.
Yep.
That's just, are you curious about what legislation the Chicago City Council has been passing?
Are you?
Everybody should be. You can figure that out. You find that out from there. Second City Zoning, an interactive map that lets you find out how your building is zoned. Learn where to locate your business and explore zoning. Now, a lot of people aren't interested in zoning, but some people are. Mm-hmm. Crime in Chicago. Crime in Chicago, it lets you explore crime trends in the 50 wards. And again, as you said, this is all stuff that's available at data.cityofchicago.org.
Yeah, the data is. These are individual apps that are on their own websites.
So right.
When you
said the data
my website
is
DerekEater.com, that is like one of, you know, dozens at this point.
you got to focus here, okay? Let's focus.
I'm all about making – so I worked on just about all of those apps. I didn't work on Transit Future.
But you worked on a bunch of these.
Sure, yes. And so Open City is really it's a collective of people that build these kinds of apps with open data. It's a banner that we release things under. And each one of them has its own sort of individual focus, right? Where each one, as you can tell, is very focused on you know, either zoning or crime or is there sewage in the Chicago River. If you look at the opencityapps.org website, which is where all these are listed, you can kind of see like a chronology of all the work we've done over the last
years.
Yeah,
I've got the link to Open City on my website. Go to mikenovak.net. This week's show, I've got a link to OpenGov Hack Night and 1871 in Open City and a bunch of these apps that they – I didn't put them all because there's so many – and you can explore for yourself. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. I see we've got a call. Let's take a call for you. David, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, greetings, Mike, from San Francisco. And I just noticed that the marathon is running right underneath my window, so every once in a while you hear a hoot.
Well, you're not going anywhere then, because you can't even cross the street when the marathon is running.
Oh, sometimes, yeah. But luckily enough, coffee's behind me, so... Hey, you know, I wanted to ask, it sounds like you're talking about, like, hazardous waste lawsuits, and it crosses my mind. In typical law, you know, a person is innocent until proven guilty, but in the case of pollution, you know, you're basically dealing with whether a chemical is considered innocent until proven guilty, and the way these corporations have been getting away with murder is they make every individual prove that a chemical is innocent until proven guilty. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of a performance bond that can be mandated for chemicals that are kind of obvious, you know, if somebody's dealing with lead or benzene or, you know, toluene or all sorts of horrible chemicals on a regular basis, their neighbors are getting injured, whether or not performance bonds are somewhat the answer to prevent these lawsuits from coming up in the first place.
Well, that seems a little bit of a tangent to what Derek does. How would you interpret this in terms of how you would collect data, Derek?
So, yeah, we don't collect too much data on that.
Is it data or data? What are we going to go with here?
It's either. Either one. It's actually challenging to collect information from legal documents as far as that goes. So, I don't really have too much insight into this particular issue, other than knowing that in Chicago, the app that you talked about earlier, Is There Sewage in the Chicago River, it monitors whenever sewage that is collected in the Chicago's combined sewer overflow system overflows into the Chicago River. And in that sewage, there's a bunch of different things, which they all measure. And so there is some information about what kinds of things get dumped into the river, but it's actually, in some cases, it's hard to know exactly what it is.
But the point is, you have to have the raw data to be able to even create something.
Sure.
So if what I would say to you, David, is if they're not providing it, if a chemical company or an entity or a municipality is not providing that raw data, there's nothing that a guy like Derek can really do.
You can sometimes go try to get it yourself, but that's hard, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to, you know, having the access to being able to gather that data on your own. But yeah, I mean, oftentimes the applications that we build are limited by what the raw resources we have available, which is this open data.
David, great. I appreciate you calling in, and enjoy the marathon. Have a great Sunday.
Yeah, no trouble. But what was the specialty that you work on?
I'm not sure which. Well, the specialty, he's doing all kinds of civic apps. And, like I mentioned earlier, it can be about crime. It can be about what the city council's passing. Mm-hmm. It could be about sewage. It can be about transit.
Oh, I see, like statistical management of government.
Exactly. And putting it in perspective and allowing people to take that and run with it.
We've got an Open Records Act out here, and we actually try to do that out here, but it just depends on whether or not they budget it or whether or not the mayor slightly defunds certain aspects.
Yeah.
Because as we're noticing, we're having this huge problem of overgrowth. There are cranes everywhere. They're building skyscrapers like crazy, and there's not enough rentals. So we're going to end up with empty skyscrapers.
All right,
everywhere.
Well, that's a really good point. I think there's a place where you could take the data on how much new construction there mm-hmm. is versus rehab versus mm-hmm. something else, and say here are the raw numbers, and this is how we might address this issue, and that maybe that's something you could do.
Yeah, and actually, there's you said you're calling in from San Francisco. There's a ton of people that are doing this exact same thing in San Francisco. There's a group out there called Code for America, and they take data just like we do from cities and governments and other municipalities, and they build different applications with them. So I would invite you to go try to connect with them and try to connect with there's a San Francisco Code for America Brigade, that's what they call themselves, and there's also an Oakland Brigade. And so if you look those groups up, they have weekly Hack Night events just like we do, and they meet every week and work on different applications. So a lot of the stuff about the built environment is very fascinating. It's very complicated. Some of the data is available. Some of it isn't. But there's a ton of value in knowing what's going on.
David, thank you for your contribution. Have a great Sunday. 773-763-9278. I see we got another call, but I need to take care of some biz. We will be back with Derek Eder from OpenGov Hack Night and Open City and his own website. And he's got tons of them, folks. It's just, you know, Google him. He's everywhere. He's everywhere on the planet. Mud Baron on Twitter. What? Sorry, I'm out of control. Mud Baron wrote, he quotes me and says, Mike now states, in this time of apps and high tech, that, quote, face-to-face contact is magic. There, take that, Facebook. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but, and I'm not sure I said that exactly. Before I get to Frank, we'll do in a second, a couple of things. I talk very briefly about these apps that you have. You worked on, is there sewage in the Chicago River?
Mm-hmm.
And you got that information from the MWRD?
Yes, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. So they actually have a page on their website that notifies whenever a combined sewer overflow event, so CSO, not the
orchestra.
Yeah, not the kind you listen to,
yeah.
Happens. And they have a map of what rivers are affected in the Cook County region. And so we saw this and thought, well, this is like really like kind of like a gross thing that's happening. Not
yes.
a lot of people know that it's happening. So we did what we could to make that more, get the word out about that. So we made this app to basically take that same data and make it very simple and easy for people to understand. So when you go to isthereSewageInTheChicagoRiver.com, right now it'll have a big blue no.
Right.
But when it's a yes, it says yes, and it shows you a map of where it happens. And then we also have...
But it doesn't tell you exactly how much, does it?
Right. So that's hard, right? That's something that that we do not have the data on, that as far as how much sewage is even coming out of these pipes, these combined sewer overflow locations. And in fact, we're still trying to figure out where the outflow locations actually are on the river. We have a general sense about what river segments are affected, but we actually do not know yet where exactly these pipes are. And so we'd like to know more precisely where these things are happening.
Yeah. And have you heard from the MWRD?
Actually, yeah. We've had a couple conversations with them, and they are aware of our application, and they think it's interesting. So we're actually in talks with them right now to potentially get some of this more precise data.
That's great. See,
yeah.
What's impressive is that folks have responded in a positive way. I was going to ask you also, you know, have you heard from the city of Chicago? Have they sent out feelers? Are they trying to co-opt you? Are they trying to hire you, get you on in to work on stuff?
So there are many people from the city of Chicago that attend the OpenGov Hack Night. In fact, there are several.
Yeah, there were people
regulars.
When I was there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so we consider ourselves independent of the city. We kind of like to stay in this sort of outsider kind of position because sometimes we make apps that are really like make the city look great, and sometimes they're very positive, and sometimes we also make applications that maybe aren't so positive, and we want to have it's positive in terms of from the perspective of the city government.
I got one for you. I got one for you because I know the EPA is monitoring the Petcoke dust on the southeast side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the EPA would have open data for you that you could create a Petcoke app. And my friends at the Southeast Environmental Task Force would be very interested in something that they can post in real time. And that's part of their problem. It's hard to get the stuff in real time.
Yeah, that's a real challenge. The Illinois EPA website does have some data available on it, although I haven't looked to see if they have any Petcoke data.
I may give you a call about that one or shoot you a message.
Yeah, please do.
And see what I can find out, because I would love to see that app.
Or come to the Hack Night and
suggest it.
And be part of a team to build it.
That's time for me to go back there. All right, before let's take a really quick phone call from Frank. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Derek. Thank you very much for taking my call. Derek, and I will be looking online for your information. One thing that interests me is the zoning. We're currently in a local neighborhood fight with Northeastern Illinois University, who's seizing property at the end of my block to build dorms for 500 students in a residential neighborhood. We've tried to FOIA the plans the university has to no avail. We can't get a hold of them, presumably because the contract hasn't been signed with the general contractor who's going to build this 5 to 6 story structure on both sides of Bryn Mawr. So would your app that you can look at zoning information actually help us out?
So that's fascinating. So the Second City zoning app that I created takes the data from the city of Chicago about the existing zoning as it is right now here in Chicago. So you can look up any property by address, and it'll tell you how it's zoned. We unfortunately don't have any information about things that are coming down the pipeline. And you guys have already tried the thing that I would try, which is FOIAing or filing a Freedom of Information Request Act on it. And I have oftentimes heard reasons given such as that, which is, oh, well, we can't give it to you because it hasn't been approved yet or confirmed yet. And, I mean, I would say that... In Chicago, the way that zoning works is very much up to each alderman. The aldermen the 50 aldermen have what's called aldermanic purview, which means that when it comes to matters directly affecting their ward, they have pretty much final say on just about everything,
right.
Especially zoning. So I would assume the alderman, if you have a relationship with that alderman, that might be an avenue to figure out some of this information. But other than that, you may just have to keep trying to file more FOIA requests.
Right. We understand. And we've tried to get information from Alderman Loreno. And it's interesting that this thing has gone from very hush-hush, we don't know anything, to very rush-rush, where apparently the eminent domain lawsuits are going to be filed next week.
Wow. So,
that's fast.
There's some real urgency around this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no time to develop an app in a couple of days.
Yeah. But. Well, I would say that oftentimes it might seem like you're sort of beating your head against the wall, but actually outside pressure and outside publicity can really, for about an issue such as this, can actually move the needle on the inside.
Right.
Ultimately, your alderman is an elected representative, and they are up for election pretty soon, actually. So you have more leverage than maybe it may seem. So I would invite you guys to really do what you can to voice your concerns.
And if things go a little slower than you anticipate, this might be a chance for you to show up at OpenGov Hack Night.
Well, you know, that certainly is an option. We do have a website up. It's neiulandgrab.com, and we've got an online petition on change.org. And when I checked this morning, we had 635 supporters so
wow.
far.
Great.
So, you know, we're trying everything we can from a grassroots level, but sometimes, you know, you run into the old axiom, you can't fight City Hall.
I totally get it. Frank, I got to let you go, but I'm certainly glad you called and alerted us to that.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, have a great Sunday. All right, in 30 seconds, what is your... I know, we're running out of time here. I got to get Stacey Myers on the show. What's your favorite app that you've been involved in and why?
Man, it's like asking me to pick
I know,
my
which
favorite
your favorite child?
Yeah,
yes,
right,
okay.
Exactly. Man, so I mean, I love them all in their own different way. They each do...
They're all equal to me.
I'll get to it. I'll pick one. Just give me a second. they all sort of are their own unique sort of attempt at getting at a certain kind of issue or topic.
Sure.
I think one of my favorite ones is actually the first one I ever created. It's ChicagoLobbyists.org. It is an application that in many ways sort of has like a personal importance to me because at the time this is back in 2011. This new data had come out on the city's data portal. And there was a group of us. I was actually working at a company called Webitex at the time. And my boss, Paul Baker, really wanted to make an app about lobbying. And so he sort of organized all this and sort of really – it was through this application that I got started on this entire journey. And it's actually a very cool app. It's like Facebook for lobbyists. You can see every lobbyist that has been interacting with the city of Chicago, who's been hiring them, how much they've been paying them, what issues they are the lobbyists about. And you can really just sort of get a really deep view into what's this very important part of how government works. And we made sure to make the app in a way that wasn't necessarily too slanted as far as having an opinion about lobbyists. We don't say
that's my job.
They don't say we don't say they're good. We don't say they're bad. We just say here's the data, right? And you can infer from that what you will. And that's actually a pretty important tenet of a lot of the applications we do. I'd say having sort of a non-biased approach to the data and doing just your best to explain what's going on to as accurately as you can gives you an immense amount of power. And people really are going to pay attention to you as opposed to maybe dismiss you as saying, oh, well, I don't agree with that opinion.
Exactly. You have to
right?
be careful how you
right.
phrase it
right.
and how you couch it.
Right.
And that is available. You can see all of these apps, including that one, at opencityapps.org. Opencityapps.org. Here's another interesting one, Vacant and Abandoned Building Finder. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Before I let you go, one of the things that happened is that there was a competition for apps by the Center for Neighborhood Technology. They had an urban sustainability apps competition. How come you didn't win?
I sort of recuse myself from competing in those application contests.
A guy named Tom Greenhaw was involved in something called Chicago Green Score. And it ranks city neighborhoods according to whether they have abundant green roofs, community gardens, farmers markets, et cetera, public transportation. So I went on and I put in my address and I got a score, which is like 49. I'm in Logan Square. Mm-hmm. And one of the things it said is there's no nearby community gardens. Mine's on the corner. So I wrote to Tom and I said, hey, you guys have inaccurate data. Because there's a community garden there. And he said, that's part of the problem. You can only work with what you can find.
That's right. That's right.
And so that's an interesting point about these applications.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, like, so that's absolutely true. The applications, as I said, are only as good as the data behind them. But one thing you can do to, and this is what I've found borne out over time, is one thing you can do is just do what you can with the data you have and put it out there. Mm-hmm. And this exact same thing happened with Chicago lobbyists, where we put out a version of the app early on, but there was data missing. We knew, you know, how much money each lobbyist was paid, and we knew who their clients were, but we didn't know exactly how much money was changing hands between these two groups.
Yeah.
And after we released that the website as it was and put all these little disclaimers all over it saying, we'd love to show you this, but we don't have the data. And we'd love to show you this, but we don't have the data. And so after we did that, we ended up getting a response back from the city, ended up having a meeting with the city in City Hall, and we presented them with 10 things that we would like to ask if they have additional data on. And they brought in people from we met the person whose job it was at the Department of Ethics to take these forms that the lobbyists have to fill out mm-hmm. and report. And he was hand typing them into the system.
Oh,
he was the
goodness.
Guy that made our data, right?
Right.
And we had this conversation. We said, can you give us these things? And we're like, yes, we can. And so 2 weeks later, they updated the data.
That's
and
amazing.
We updated our app. And the mayor got to go on to, I think he went on to Chicago Tonight and said, hey, look, more transparency data. Like, win for us, win for them, right? So
right.
It was, that's the sort of story that I really like. Again, another reason why I like that particular application, a Chicago lobbyist. But that is a pattern that is really held true over time with all these different applications.
Well, Derek Eder, thank you so much. I want you back on the show at some point. We'll talk more environmental apps. We're going to get that Petco app going. I'm working on that. All the information is on my website, mikenovak.net, because there's, like we said before, Derek is all over the place. But we've got the links to his website, and we've got the link to Open City and more, and OpenGov Hack Night. And we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.